It's like, I write in the book, it's like a scene from CSI Miami. There's like a crime scene now on the other side of the lake. There's a four-wheel drive Jeep that's backed up to the lake. And there's a steel cable running from that into the water attached to my golf cart, and a group of men standing around looking very solemn about them. No, they're not laughing at all. They don't see the humor in this. And of course, one of them looks over across the lake and sees the numbnuts in bare feet standing there. And I can imagine that I've now been eyeballed, that they say, well, that's the guy who sunk the golf cart. So it's just this humiliating walk of shame down the fairway. And these are the sorts of things that I was recording in the journal. I really felt it was unfair. I was sure that people were lying to me about sinking golf carts. And so I was up, I got invited to come up to the tournament, the Firestone tournament at Akron. And Gary McCord, the CBS announcer, was there, and I was telling people about me sinking the golf cart. And McCord pipes up. He goes, "Oh, I sunk a golf cart once." He goes, "Yeah." He said, "But we were chasing a Roadrunner at the time." But at least I found someone else who sunk a golf cart. The unforeseen part of this book for me was, I mean, I thought it was just going to be kind of a, you know, rocky and occasionally funny golf journal. But the editor very astutely pointed out, you have to explain to people why a person with your problems would be playing golf in the first place. And so I had to sort of go back and revisit that time with my dad. And you know, as I told you all, that the impulse that I had was to, I just wanted to carve out some time with him. And not knowing then, certainly, that he was going to die at a young age and sort of, you know, suddenly be gone from our lives. And so my regret was that I hadn't behaved a little bit better on the golf course. And so I write a little bit about my father in the book, but I also write about my youngest son, and Quinn, who's only 8 years old now, and he was five or six, I think. But ever since he was a little kid, he'd always had a set of, like, plastic, you know, like play school golf clubs, and he'd always whack the ball around the yard, and I always brought, you know, I'd amuse him. I've never played, but I mean, I figured little kids just like to hit stuff. They hit anything. A golf ball's as good as anything. They'll whack anything. So as I was in the middle of this relapse, I would leave and go play golf, and I would come home with these stories. He, for some reason, his 8-year-old curiosity got piqued, and he said, "Well, can I come play golf with you? You know, what are you going to say?" So I would, first time we borrowed a set of clubs, and he loved it. So I went out and got him one of these little set, these U.S. kids set of golf clubs, and then he would go out there with me. We'd sit on the practice range, and he would sit there. He would sit there forever if I let him, just hit ball after ball after ball. He loved it. He played in a couple little tournaments, and he won one. I write about that in the book. And now all of a sudden, I realize that my grand plan, which is to quit the game of golf the minute I quit writing this book, with a bailout again as fast as I could, with as much dignity as I had left, is not going to happen, because he's enjoying it so much, and he has this greatest attitude about it. If you've ever seen little kids on the golf course, they play, and it was an attitude that I never had, and I'm probably just wired differently than he is. I hope I am, for his sake. But he'll get up there, and you've seen this, and he'll whiff the ball, completely miss the ball. Now it's me. I want to wrap the driver around a tree when that happens. He laughs uproariously. He thinks it's the funniest thing in the world, and it is the funniest thing in the world for anybody to do it. If you are just filming it as just a YouTube segment, someone standing up and whiffing on a golf ball is hilarious on its face, and the person who sees the least amount of humor in it is the person with the golf club in their hand, usually. But I thought, I've got to stick with it, because he's out there and he's loving it, and if any of that sort of wonderful attitude, that carefree and silly attitude about golf, rubs off on me, I'll be a better person for it. I'll probably be a better golfer for it too. Because he can miss the ball like that, laugh his ass off, and get up and knock it a mile right down the middle again. I mean, just nothing. Shrugs, off he goes. And that seems to be the secret of the game. I write about this in there, because people say, "Why? What is it about the game?" And it's very hard to put it in words. There's something addictive about it. And I think, first of all, because it's so extremely, absurdly difficult to do it well. So that when you do hit that one great golden shot, and you sink that ridiculously long 40-foot putt, and you feel like Tiger Woods for just that single solitary moment. The human mind works in a very diabolical way, because it tells you that you can do this all the time. You could do, if you practice, you can do this all the time. It's lying to you. If you practice, you can't do it all the time, and I don't care how much you practice, you can't do it all the time. I think the other attraction is that I knew a lot of guys my own age. For a while, I loved to use age as the excuse for why I wasn't playing well. I thought, you know, oh, I got a bad knee, I got this, I got that. And then I go out on the golf course, and there's guys my age and older playing scratch golf, tremendous golfers. And that blows my whole theory. Every year, Golf Digest publishes these lists that are meant to demoralize every golfer in America. And they're the list of celebrities and CEOs and people who golf, and what their handicap index is. And now some of the, and when you deal with the celebrities, the handicap index is iffy, because a lot of those are supplied by publicists who want to make the celebrities look like much more competent athletes than they really are. Among those on this celebrity list of golfers, Bob Dylan. In my wildest, I'm trying to picture Bob Dylan on the 16th tee at Pebble Beach. I just, it's so hard to picture that. With his foot joys, his saddle shoes, and his pink and green outfit. I just don't see Dylan out. Neil Young plays golf. Now, this is mind-boggling to me as a child of the 60s. And so I'm looking at the handicaps, and here's what you find out. First of all, some of the best golfers, and by a huge majority of the top 10 kind of celebrity kind of golfers, country music singers are great golfers. I don't know why. Vince Gill's a great, a bunch of them are great golfers. And the rockers are kind of more down in the middle of the middle hand, as you might expect, because I imagine they're still stoned when they play. I'm just guessing. probably they are. And then you get into some very disturbing, and I write about this, just crushing facts about celebrity golfers. Justin Timberlake plays to a 6 handicap. He's an incredibly good golfer. This was the worst news of all the news possibly put together. He was in a boy band. This cannot be. This is America. He can't be a good golfer. Maybe a good ice skater, maybe something, but not a golfer. And he's an incredibly good golfer, it turns out. There were a few others in there that were a little bit unnervy. Some of them you don't mind. Kenny G's a fantastic golfer, and I don't mind. I mean, Kenny G is harmless. Kenny G, okay. You can see he's got to be a mellow guy. He's got to be a mellow guy on the golf course. He's just cruising around out there, and he's terrific. I don't have any problem with that. I don't even have any trouble with the country music.